I have the joy of presenting our own Nick Epps. I guess I'll let you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us what brought you to this topic. I had your bio, but I think I'd rather let you tell us, since we all know you. So please join me in welcoming Nick Epps. Would you like to
hear this? Thank you for the welcome. I guess some of you know me, some better than others. I guess getting to this topic, I graduated from law school in May of 2008. I started working with Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company at that point. Recently, I made a change to strategic wealth management, and I'm opening my own law practice. And so I have, thank you. It's a lot of work, but I have some practical experience, a lot of knowledge from research, and although I'm not really used to speaking in front of large groups, so hopefully you're supposed to imagine your audience in your underwear. I don't really feel comfortable with that, but I appreciate that. So I guess just as an overview of what we're going to be talking about today, socially responsible investing. And I guess, what does that mean? As a congregation, it seems like, based on some of the discussions I've had with some of you individually, and just general knowledge about the types of people that we have here, social responsibility in other areas of our life is a pretty important aspect of our lives for most of us. However, typically in our finances, that's really the last place that we go. So I think what we have to ask ourselves is, first of all, what does it mean to be socially responsible when it comes to our finances? What do we have to change? Do we have to change anything in order to be socially responsible? And also, if anybody has questions at any point, feel free to jump in. I'm going to allow time for discussion as well, but you know, I'm pretty open about how to do this. So, and then we also have to determine, and both individually as family members, business owners, and as a congregation, how important is it to be socially responsible with our finances? Maybe it's something that's way down on the list, or maybe it's something that, you know, we just haven't been active in doing because we haven't thought about it. And then if we're going to be socially responsible, what options are there for us to be able to do that? If we're going to make changes, how do we do that? So let's see if I can go to the next page here. I might need, you know what? Actually, if you hand me my mouse there, I have an optical mouse with no cord, so yeah. Well, actually, it's because the touchpad doesn't work. So let's go back. All right, so what is socially responsible investing? Well, I guess the definition that you're going to see if you research it on your own is that it not only intends to maximize the financial returns that you get, but also the positive social impact of the investments that you're making. Is your money going to a good place? Now, what does that mean? Again, the defining socially responsible investing, as you're starting to see, becomes kind of the biggest hurdle that we have to overcome. There are a lot of ways. Environmental responsibility, which is something that just by the fact that we have an active green committee, is something that I think that a lot of us care about here. But there are other areas as well. Social justice. Are the companies that we're investing in treating their employees well? Are they treating their consumers well? Are they having a positive impact on society? Are they doing charitable work? And are they investing in their local communities? And is that something that we can do that we don't necessarily have to rely on the companies in which we're investing to do that? And then also historically, it includes potentially avoiding companies that are involved in certain activities, firearms manufacture, alcohol. Again, there are people of a sort of more fundamentalist religious bent that tend to ask for, they don't want to be involved in supporting companies that make, say, the birth control pill, or that are involved in abortion. It's really how you define it that determines what your definition of socially responsible investing is. So a little bit of history, and I'm going to stick with American history here. The Quakers were the first documented instance in America of socially responsible investing that I could find. They refused to be involved with businesses that supported the slave trade. which, as you can see by the years, is way ahead of its time by 100, or depending on your how you view history, 200 years ahead of where everybody sort of comes down in that area. So, also, they avoided other companies that were involved, again, in those sort of sinful activities. And I guess I keep using alcohol, but I should stress that it's not necessarily the opinion of the person giving the presentation. So. So Methodist minister John Wesley, another guy who was way ahead of his time, his sermon, The Use of Money, encouraged his encouraged the people of his church to be socially responsible with their investments. If they're going to be investing in businesses, they should be mindful of the impact that it has on their neighbors and also their fellow man in general. He also warned people away from businesses that were potentially harmful to one's health. I'm sure a lot of you know a little bit of history of the tanning industry, Mad Hatters and that sort of thing. So again, what the kind of theme that we're seeing is that religious organizations really have taken the lead historically in this way. In a lot of ways, we tend to think, a lot of us, of religious organizations, maybe especially our former religious organizations, in my case Catholicism, as being conservative, but in some ways they really are ahead of the curve, or have been historically. I know it's kind of a weird thing to wrap your head around. So, in more modern history, the 60s kind of are where this sort of thing came to a head as a big social issue. Dow Chemical, a lot of you probably remember the outrage. excuse me. The use of napalm and Agent Orange being something that there was a lot of backlash over that. And going on into the 70s, awareness about apartheid, nuclear power, automobile emissions, all things that people, as information started to be more available, people started to really wonder, you know, is this what we want our companies, and in some cases our government, to be doing? And it may seem strange that I mentioned government, but a lot of the protection that we rely on financially comes from the government as well. And then there's kind of a gap there, as you can see. You might notice a lot of that, the Reagan years, kind of a big gap there, a time of cost-benefit analyses in labor, and a little bit less emphasis on the social responsibility. And then in the 90s, when the market was kind of going through the roof and nobody cared, at least in America. In Britain, it was starting to become, in the 90s, a bigger issue, but not here until really around the turn of the millennium, I guess. It sounds like it was a long time ago when I say it that way, but I guess it's been 10 years now. There started to be a lot more information available on the internet, more mutual fund companies doing research and making socially responsible investing available to people in this country. And then just a recent example of socially responsible investing, the Sudan Divestment Task Force, designed to divest assets from companies that are involved or that are connected with the genocide in Darfur. It's a good example of a recent emphasis on social responsibility that kind of, it's sort of similar to the anti-apartheid, except it's a very active mode of practicing this. And the U.S. government supported it. A lot of mutual fund companies supported it, that companies that are typically associated with social responsibility. So now, in addition to socially responsible investing, there's strategic sustainable investing, as I just want to kind of cover this briefly. There's looks like there's a lot here, but it brings some objective standards to socially responsible investing. I'll leave it to you to determine whether you feel that there can be such a thing as objective standards when it comes to this sort of thing. There's a lot of math involved. They try to determine whether the companies involved are actually able to maintain profitability through the social responsible investing that they're doing, with a lot of the idea here being that, if a company is damaging itself through socially responsible investing that it isn't very socially responsible, because it investing in such companies is going to cause people to, you know, to lose everything that they have if those companies go out of business. So, but again, it's very recent and something that's just starting to gain some momentum. Another aspect of social responsibility in finance is risk management. Now, when people think of socially responsible investing, people think of what do you do with money maybe that we're saving for retirement or saving long-term, money that we're putting in stocks, bonds, mutual funds. But financial security really has a lot more than just that, those retirement savings. Now, risk management, when they think of that, they usually think of insurance. I didn't put the word insurance up there at first because I didn't want everybody to go running out of here as soon as I put the slide up. But since my background is in insurance a lot too, it's something that I'd like to talk about, and it's very important. Any time that you're insuring yourself against risk, the possibility of loss, and most risks we either save for or avoid, but there are those risks that those losses that are high severity, but they don't happen very often, and more importantly, they're not predictable as to when they might happen. Although, if you know exactly when you're going to die, that might be helpful, but frankly, I don't want to know. So. Especially if it's going to be soon, so which I hope is not the case. So, but risk management is essential to financial security because those losses are catastrophic. If a death happens, a major breadwinner in a family, if you're disabled and you can't go to work, usually even if you have some protection through work, you're losing probably. Most people get maybe 60% of their income, and it's. That's pre-tax. So I don't know any of us that can afford to take a 40% pay cut. And so these are some big concerns. Now, when you're, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm a little, I have some somewhere, but I don't know where. Thank you. So when you're insuring yourself, the first thing to think about is what do we know about the insurance company that we are insuring ourselves through? There are two types of insurance companies. Stock companies are owned by stockholders, which is just what it sounds like. And mutual companies are owned by the actual policyholders of the insurance company. Oh, that's wonderful. Much better. Thank you. Now, what that means is the owners are who the profits go to. Insurance companies are, at the very least, their goal is to stay in business and stay profitable. Well, stock companies are traded on the exchange. Excuse me. So they're concerned with their stock price. that means that the profits go back to stockholders, generally, before they go back to policyholders in the form of dividends. In mutual companies, they go directly to the policy owners. Now, I'm not up here to make specific recommendations to anybody individually or the finance committee unless I'm asked to do so in a different setting. I'm not going to answer questions about what I would recommend or my personal preference or anything like that, but just to head off the question, I started with Northwestern Mutual. The company that I'm with is associated with Massachusetts Mutual, so you can draw your own conclusions from that. Now, the premiums are invested, those that don't go into expenses or paying claims are invested into a general account, and that's invested on behalf of the policy owners. So that's really so there are kind of two elements. Is the insurance company are they paying their claims? Are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? And how are they investing the money that isn't going to paying claims? Now, there are a lot of controls on general accounts, how insurance companies can invest those. Unfortunately, they're not environmental or social in nature. Most of them are associated with with what asset classes, as in, you know, how much can you have in stocks and bonds, and basically how risky can you be. And but the environmental and social impact isn't considered as much because that really doesn't have to do with whether a company can pay claims. Now, there are insurance companies out there that promote social responsibility. They're involved with charities. Some are better at paying claims than others. Some treat their policy owners better than others. It's something that you have to do a lot of research on. But it's really down to us individually is where that comes in. Now there's, it's really a difficult thing. Oops, I kind of lost a little bit there. It's really a difficult thing to determine whether an insurance company is meeting your criteria for social responsibility. If your number one criteria is environmentalism, that's very difficult to find. Excuse me. But if your number one concern is the company giving back? Is the company doing what it's supposed to be doing within its mandate of how its business is supposed to be run? Then you can probably find something. Now, what I would encourage people to keep in mind is that if you feel like there isn't a company that really works for you, and you decide that you're not going to insure yourself as a result, there are risks in that too. And you're also depending on the government, and you're potentially putting a drain on not only on society, but people that you care about. I mean, again, let's take the major breadwinner of a family. If you're concerned, if you're concerned about environmental responsibility and you don't get life insurance, and unfortunately, if you kiss the bus, as they sometimes say in my business, not to clients generally, but if that happens to you, you are you put the money that you had in that you might have used to pay premiums into a socially responsible funds, but your family is left trying to figure things out, and depending on the government, depending on the charity of others, which we always encourage the charity of others, but to actually depend on somebody else giving us handouts, we just have to be aware that's a decision that we're making. And again, not one that I encourage. So another aspect of social responsibility is community investing. I talked about that a little bit. I want to highlight it because I think that it's an area that we can explore further as a congregation. Community investing is the money going back? Is it being used locally? Is it being used to help people in a directly sort of charitable way? Again, most of these community investing groups, they offer loans to maybe lower income families that are higher credit risks. But part of what they do is teaching people how they can actually pay back the loans, how they can basically they do everything they can to make it so that these community investments are good investments, something that you can rely on, because ultimately, if you're going to invest your money, you want to at least get that money back and hopefully make a return on it. Whereas otherwise it's charity. You're just giving to charity. So this community investing tries to bridge that gap a little bit. And there are some resources that we can use to find community investments. So the state of socially responsible investing today, there's been a huge increase in assets under management by funds that call themselves socially responsible since in the last 10 or 15 years. It's a fast-growing area. Awareness is really starting to pick up when it comes to socially responsible investing. And there's more pressure on government and institutional investors. Insurance companies are an example of institutional investors. They invest their money on behalf of a large number of people. But there's more pressure on those types of investors to be more socially responsible. And then also, shareholder advocacy is something that's becoming more and more popular. It's basically shareholders, if you own part of a company, that you're a part owner. You own stock. A lot of times there's most of the stock that we have is common stock, voting stock, and people kind of forget that they actually have a voice in that what they say, what they feel can really matter to a corporation if a large enough number of people gets together and does some of these examples of shareholder advocacy, like proxy voting, and then also shareholder resolutions designed to tell companies really what we feel. And again, I'll get to that a little bit more And what is so? What does the future look like? Well, it seems more likely that the negative aspects of socially responsible investing are going to decrease, because a lot of what makes socially responsible investing unattractive is the perception that it is not profitable or not as profitable as your typical investing that's not going to be concerned with this sort of thing. But as there are more companies, mutual fund companies out there that do this sort of thing, that are actually involved in socially responsible investing, there becomes more information. It becomes less expensive to acquire this information. And the internet has helped quite a bit, I think we can all agree, when it comes to finding information. So people are more and more informed, and more financial professionals become informed. I can say from personal experience that I know a lot of financial professionals. I don't know many that have the level of knowledge that I have about it, or that have any desire to work in the field for some of the reasons that I just mentioned. Well, that's something that I think is going to change as well. And I think that we're going to be looking at better measures and better and more reliable standards as we go forward as well. So let's talk a little bit about the benefits. Morningstar, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Morningstar. They do a lot of research. It's something, they're a company that insiders use quite a bit for to manage money, and they get their information on, they study just thousands upon thousands of companies and stocks, mutual funds, and they did a 15-year study showing that returns were actually comparable over the last 15 years. Now, we have to remember that the last 15 years are, you know, there a lot has happened. No 15-year period is the same as any other, but it lets us know that there's a chance that maybe we're not sacrificing so much. And then the rest of the benefits are really personal. You know, how much does it matter to you? And if you don't have to feel guilty about where your money is going, that's something that we value. There are some risks involved. Again, there's the concern about lower returns. We do eliminate a lot of profitable companies. I know that, let's say ExxonMobil, for example, is an extremely profitable company, but isn't necessarily considered socially responsible. Again, I'll leave that to all of you. But again, the Morningstar study helps that out. Now, it tends to be more expensive to find companies, to do the screening process, and it's harder to get help because, again, there are fewer financial professionals that are really, that have the knowledge or willingness to work in that area. Also, there are other risks. How do you characterize a socially responsible mutual fund? I mean, anybody can call themselves socially responsible. There are more controls on this than there used to be, but it's really kind of an industry thing. You know, it's a buzzword, socially responsible investing. So, right, it's extremely common. And I'm not going to name the company, but as an example, when I was in law school, I did a paper on a large Wisconsin company that was involved in kind of crossing their T's and dotting their I's to become involved in the Green Tier program through the DNR. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with that, but Green Tier is another program that, especially at the time that I was researching it, had kind of loose requirements for participation. And that's really one of the issues. Now, if you're talking about being able to actually have government controls on this sort of thing, there really isn't any. As far as anybody can call themselves socially responsible, and there really isn't any backlash that's going to happen legally to them. It's all going to come from shareholder awareness and people actually catching that. So, again, that's another definition that is, with the strategic sustainable investing, is something that they're trying to have, standards and measures, but sustainability is very broadly defined. The definition that I was able to find is basically, can the company continue to exist and not put itself at risk of going out of business and losing investors' money in the process? And that may not be the definition of sustainable that we're comfortable with either. It illustrates the difficulty of defining these measures. That's kind of the universal concern, and that's where a lot of this recent history started. Again, with things like chemical production and nuclear production. So, going forward, there are probably going to be more of those. But again, what you have to do is look at the only way to know for sure what a mutual fund, for example, is doing when it comes to social responsibility is to look at the prospectus, look at the companies that are in there, and look at what their mission is and are they following it. Again, it's a lot of work for somebody who doesn't do that professionally. I mentioned shareholder advocacy, which is something that that the UUA has really promoted. You can't participate in shareholder advocacy if you're not a shareholder. You're absolutely right about that. So, in your definition of social responsibility, maybe for you it is socially responsible to own part of these companies and to get involved. It feels like we can't change the world by just owning a little bit of stock, but if you get enough people together and enough people that care about what companies are doing, it can actually make a difference. In fact, the UUA is involved in the, I'm going to fast forward a little bit so I can see that. That's the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, and that's one of the big things that they do. The UUA is an example of an institutional investor, and they have money that they have to invest just like any other institutional investor. The website for the company or for the organization has a list of all the shareholder resolutions that they have done. There are a lot of recently a lot of banks. And a lot of the shareholder resolutions have to do with executive pay, which, you know, right? All I have to do is use that phrase, and you know what I'm talking about. If people don't own that stock and aren't involved, then changes aren't necessarily made. So, yeah, that information is out there, and but again, that's another example of an institutional investor. A lot of people, fewer than in the past, but a lot of people are relying on pensions either. Through the state or through their former company, whatever it is, if you don't take the time to research it, you don't necessarily know where that money comes from. Now, is that enough for us to say, I'm just not going to take my pension anymore? Well, you know, we have to eat, right? So, you know, again, but you know, to the extent that we can control things, there are a lot more. Again, shareholder advocacy is another great example of a place that maybe we can have some control where traditionally we think that we don't. So. I'm glad that you brought that up because that I think that goes to the point where going forward, there's more and more information out there, and I think that people are becoming more concerned about this. Now this is just an opinion, but I feel like our current political and social environment, it lends itself well to some major increases in the area of socially responsible investing. So, I guess I'm kind of at risk of going a little bit long here, but I just want to talk a little bit about the funds that we have. Now, for those of you, most of us, I think, participated in the last parish meeting. And parish, is that right? I always struggle with those, you know. I don't think of it as a parish, like in the sense that. But there, we have money, and the finance committee has money that they need to make decisions on. Right now, my understanding is that we're keeping money in savings accounts, CDs, and that sort of thing with banks. Now, I think as a parish, right? We need to that if we are going to be committed to being a green community, if we're going to be committed to social justice, I think that it's important that we examine what we're doing. with some of those funds. Now, the UUA does its own investment screening, and there are the tools for congregations I pulled right off the website. These are tools designed to help individual parishes and organizations determine whether they're being socially responsible and how they might make changes on that. Again, there's help with shareholder advocacy, but also, where's your congregation on the socially responsible investing spectrum? We can actually, there are tools where we can actually kind of, in theory, objectively determine where we are and what we need to do going forward in order to become more socially responsible. And again, but that depends on us. Every one of us here, anybody who's involved and who is concerned about what we're doing with our money, you know, this is a discussion that the finance committee needs to have, and we need to, it's something that we need to be involved in, because these decisions, maybe I'm out of line here, but I feel like if we're going to, you know, all the values that we have as a group, if we're not putting those into practice in every element of what we're doing, then I think it's a little bit hypocritical. So I think it's something that we need to examine, and maybe keeping money in CDs or just in a bank is a good idea. Maybe we have a good institution that's doing that, that isn't, you know, paying executives exorbitant amounts, that isn't denying loans to people or giving out loans to people that shouldn't be getting them. Being involved in the mortgage crisis a little bit, but we need to know that we shouldn't just do it by default. There are some other options out there. Again, CDs and money markets. We can also actually invest money, particularly money that's supposed to be long term. That we're not planning on using within the next year or two. I know there is a chunk that falls into that category. But there, we can actually, if we determine what our socially responsible investing standards are, there are mutual funds, bond funds, relatively safe, although they're always, there's always going to be more risk if you put money into the market than there is with CDs and money market accounts. That's something that, you know, without a doubt. We can also get involved in community investing. The UUA is a matching program. Now, this doesn't mean they give us money. What it means is we are committing not only our money, but we're committing UUA money to community investing. So this is what you need to do. They'll match up to $10,000 each year for up to 3 years, and it requires a minimum of $2,000. They have a database of institutions, community investing institutions that qualify for this. There's only one in Madison that's Forward Community Investing. And again, they do essentially what what I was talking about when it comes to community investing groups. They give loans to lower income households and help them pay for those. There are other Wisconsin options, but we don't necessarily have to go through the UUA. We don't have to do the matching. I think it's a good thing to do. I think that it shows our commitment. But again, it's something that we have to make a decision on, and I'm not going to give a formal recommendation on that. There are options out there. We just need to make sure that we're educated about it. I don't know if Barb is here today, but okay. But I know that Barb has been very, she's been very magnanimous and really wanted me to put this on so that we could get some awareness about this. Again, it's something that I think we need to explore further. And as part of being a green community, if that's something, you know, that's important to us, at the very least, we should consider the green aspect. But I think that as a congregation, we have some values that I think we're a lot better than just putting the money out there and not worrying about it. So, with banks, if you select a financial institution like such as a bank that where your money is going to be insured there, you can do that. Anytime you put something into the market, though, there isn't going to be that kind of insurance. That's just part of the. Part of the risk that you take, and that's something to consider, because we don't want to flush all of our money down the toilet in the name of socially responsible investing either, because that, you know, that hurts everybody here. So.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's I really didn't discuss the proxy voting in much detail, but. The UUA has a service by which it does its own proxy voting, and it has guidelines, published guidelines for how they do that. It's a case by case basis with regard to some issues, but you know they have guidelines for you know, if a company is doing this, you know, that triggers, you know, this is something that we should vote against because it's not responsible. And with respect to asset allocation, absolutely, that's, as you can see, I mean, if we have I believe that the long-term fund has somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 in it. It wouldn't make sense to put all that in the same place, regardless of how we're doing it. But I think that with the community, with the matching program here, just as an example, it's something that's palatable. And that maybe it makes sense for us to take a risk in investing with some of the money, but again, we have to make sure that it's there because it's unless we're going to be a charity with respect to that money, the key thing is to make sure that we have it around. So it's always a balance. So I guess I'm kind of over time,
thank you.
Now, as is usual, I would just remind you that Prairie is a do-it-yourself society, much more than many. And that means if this talk kind of lit your fire, maybe you would be one of those people who could help us think more about this. There isn't somebody in the background who's ready to just spend a lot of time on this. So think about whether you might be one of those people. And if this does interest you and you're willing to spend some time, then Barb Park would be the first person to approach as the chair of the Finance Committee.